Pedagógica de Vaughan asegura un ambiente de inmersión cuidado y de calidad. Campamentos de verano Vaughan, 91-133-5832. No lo dejes para el último momento, 91-133-5832.
Para más información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833 y te ayudaremos con lo que necesites. 91-133-5833.
Esta es La Hora Extra con Richard Vaughan.
Hello and welcome to the extra hour. Okay, Monday evening, 10 o'clock at night, pretty late. But here we are together for an extra hour, an extra opportunity for you, for me, to get back together. You and me, we can get back together and continue in our mutual, let's say, quest, our mutual effort for you to improve your English. Are the rich getting richer and the poor poorer? Well, many people say that, but I'm not sure I agree with that. Some people are getting very, very rich. That is true. But I think that has always been the case relative to the amount of money. Back in the 19th century, the Vanderbilt, in the United States, the Vanderbilt family, the Carnegie family, the Rockefeller family, the Morgan family, and many others, the Mellon family, were scandalously rich. Of course, they made their wealth in industry and business. It wasn't aristocratic or nobility wealth, like in Europe in many cases, like the some families whose ancestors won nobility titles, like the Duke of Alba, and then for the five centuries after that, the family benefits from that title. In the United States, all of the rich people originally, of course, made money through business or industry or similar. But no, I don't think the rich are getting richer, yes, but I don't think the poor are getting poorer. That's the thing. I don't agree on the poor end of the equation. Perhaps the gap is growing. The gap is growing. Maybe because the rich are getting richer 10% every year, and the poor are getting richer 5% every year, which means the poor are 5% less poor every year, but the rich are 10% more rich. More rich, I mean, richer. But I don't think the poor are getting poorer. Everything I'm saying, however, is pre-COVID. The pandemic, I will reserve my opinion and my impressions until one or two years after the end of the pandemic, because the pandemic has changed the rules of the game to a certain extent. Las reglas del juego, the rules of the game have been changed because of the pandemic, so I don't know. In that case, Richard, is aspirin a popular pain reliever? Yes, it is. It's a very popular pain reliever. Yes, analgésico is aliviador del dolor, pain reliever. To relieve, escrito relieve, is aliviar. Y alivio is relief, con F. What a relief. Qué alivio. Dios mío. What a relief. So a pain reliever. Aspirin is not, it's still very popular, of course, but the ibuprofen and paracetamol have replaced aspirin to a very important degree. Bayer Aspirin, I imagine, has suffered a lot. That line of business for Bayer, because of the growth of ibuprofen and paracetamol, of these approaches to pain relief. But nevertheless, aspirin is still a popular pain reliever. But I take maybe 2 or 3 aspirin per year now. And I'll take ibuprofen maybe once a month. Not very often. Paracetamol, I never take it unless ibuprofen doesn't work. And then I'll take a paracetamol. But I don't suffer headaches too much anymore. Maybe once a month. But they are not very strong headaches. But they do bother me. But not like before. Do professional soccer players need to stay in shape? Yes. A professional soccer player, you know, they need to be in good shape. They have to run. They run about 10 kilometers in an hour and a half. You know, the first half is 45 minutes, and the second half is 45 minutes. And if the player plays the full 90 minutes or 92 minutes, well, I think the player runs around 10 kilometers. Yes. How far does a soccer player run in a game? How far? 9.5 miles, no, that's about 13 kilometers. I don't know. Have you ever wondered how much a soccer player actually runs during a single match? Well, the answer is somewhere between 7 and 9.5 miles, which is far more than any other sport. You know, I'm not sure if I believe this because a lot of times they're not running. I don't know. I really don't know. I have my doubts about that. I really do. I don't know. If you jog for an hour and a half, I guess you can jog about 9.5 miles now. I don't know. Be careful when you see these things. I would say maybe 9 kilometers, but not 9 miles. ¿Cuánto? ¿Qué distancia corre? Let me put it in Spanish. ¿Qué distancia corre un, let's see, un futbolista en un partido? All right, let's see. Aunque la distancia recorrida depende de variantes, etc. entre 8 y 12 kilómetros por encuentro. All right. So they need to be in very good shape. They need to be in very, very good shape. And so that's happened sometimes that a player shows up in August or in July to start preparing for the season and he's fat. That happened with Hazard, you know, the Belgian player for Real Madrid. He showed up and he was clearly, you could tell just looking at him, that he was maybe 10 kilos overweight. And it's not easy to get back into shape. It takes a lot of work. And I have heard that Hazard is an outstanding player, always the second half of the season, wherever he plays. The first half, he's usually not in shape, and it takes him a long time. But Hazard is having the same problems that Gareth Bale had, just constantly injured. It's el, how do you say, el sino de Real Madrid, is the players, the more money they spend for a player, the more the player's injured. That seems to be the case. But in any case, do professional soccer players need to stay in shape? Yes, they do. If they want to perform at the top of their ability, if they want to perform well, they have to be in very, very good shape. Is making as much money as possible your only objective in life? My only objective is to make as much money as possible. No. That's not my objective, and it's never been my objective. It's not even on my list of objectives. Making money, yes, it's one of my objectives because I need to make money. But making as much money as possible is not among my top 5 objectives. It's not among any of my objectives. Now, to make a lot of money would be fantastic. I would love to be swimming in money, but that's definitely not. But I'm not going to lose a single night of sleep trying to figure out how to achieve that objective. And I'm not going to work day and night, night and day, try to make as much money as possible. I never think of it in that way. I work hard because I want my clients to appreciate them, to be happy with my service. And that's it. It's a question of responsibility toward the client. The person who pays money, a person pays, gives me money in exchange for a service. Now, that person wants to receive equivalent value in the service than the money relinquished. That the money that the client hands over to me, the client has expectations that he or she will receive the equivalent value or more. And so I have to do the best I can and work hard to provide that value and to provide, to make that, that the perception on the part of the client is that, in fact, it is true. They receive equal or better value for the money they gave up. To give up money, here, I'll give you my money. What do you give me in return? I remember one man asked me, he said, if I give you this money, what do you promise me? And I said, well, I promise you that the money will be in my pocket and not in yours. And he was surprised. He was shocked. I said, just paying me, you know, I will give you an outstanding teacher, outstanding methodology, but you're going to have to give to your part as well. My teacher will motivate you, but you are part of the equation. So I cannot guarantee anything. I never guarantee. Well, I can guarantee. I said, look, if you do this, you follow exactly what I say, I will guarantee you. But following what I say could cost 30,000 euros. But I'll give you English. You will walk away with English language. You will walk away bilingual. But you have to do it my way. So making money, making as much money as possible is not my objective in life. Hey, do the letters FBI stand for Federal Bureau of Investigation? Correct. The initials FBI stand for Federal Bureau of Investigation. And CIA? The CIA stands for Central Intelligence Agency. And NATO? NATO stands for North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Huh. And the OECD? OECD. That stands for Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. Oh, and the OPEC? OPEC, O-P-E-C, right? Those letters stand for Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. And CETO, escrito CEATO. That organization doesn't exist anymore. No, it used to exist, but not anymore. What did it stand for? It stood for Southeast Asian Treaty Organization. It was similar to NATO, but Australia, Indonesia, South Vietnam, Thailand, Singapore, Malaysia, and I think the Philippines. I don't remember. I don't remember what kind. Maybe India. I don't know. What countries belonged to CETO? Let's see. In September 1954, the United States, France, Great Britain, New Zealand, Australia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Pakistan, Toma, Pakistan, formed the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, or CETO. All right. The purpose of the organization was to prevent communism from gaining ground in the region. Okay. In that region. Not in the region of the United States, France, and Great Britain, but in Southeast Asia. Okay, communism. To gain ground, to prevent communism from gaining. Evitar que el comunismo ganara terreno. In the Requiem. It was not successful. Communism gained control, especially Vietnam. I mean, basically, the manifestation of this question was in Vietnam, and that was a fiasco. So, but that's CETO. But I don't know when CETO was stopped. I don't know when the... Maybe it's still operating, but I don't think so. Disolución. Here it is. It was dissolved, but I don't know when. 1973. India withdrew in 1973. And then finally, I think after the fall of Vietnam to the communists, 1977. En junio del 97, la organización dejó de existir. All right. From 1954 to 1957, CETO. Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, that's those letters or those initials stood for Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. What does GPS stand for? I don't remember, Geo Algo Positioning System, Sistema de Posicionamiento Geo, no sé qué. What does GPS stand for? Let's see. Global Positioning System. All right. Global Positioning System. You know, people take that for granted now. It's interesting. It's magic. It's magic that you can drive from any city to the most remote places, usually, and the voice can be telling you, en 100 metros gire a la derecha. In Calle Papapap, in un pueblecito, in Mogarraf, in the province of Salamanca, for example. And I wonder how many people work on the GPS, you know, these GPS systems and the voices, all of the recordings of these voices. Quite impressive. Quite impressive what technology is doing. You know, and now I no longer have the ability to find things. I've become dependent on GPS. I mean, I've forgotten. I don't remember. How did I find places before? You know, but I had no problem. Before GPS, I had no problem finding my destinations. I paid more attention to the traffic signs or to the indications on the highways. Okay, it's la salida 63. Okay, fine. The exit 63. And so I was a little bit more alert. So the GPS is making us less alert and more dependent on technology. If we become too dependent on technology, the youngest generation doesn't bother to learn the multiplication tables. 7/8 or 56. And with GPS, we're losing our ability to find things on our own. You know, it's interesting because men have very good spatial abilities and women usually don't. So spatial, to navigate and things. It's simply because over the past 10,000 years, the men have been leading the expeditions and the women taking care of the children and not paying attention to the direction they're going. But the men had to find the places and the women had to take care of the men themselves and the women had to take care of everybody. The men had to find the location, the destination. And so over 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 years, Homo sapiens, men have a certain ability, spatial ability, that women often don't have. All right, so, but in any case, let's go on. So the letters FBI stand for Federal Bureau of Investigation. Hey, Richard, can you water ski if you don't have a boat to pull you? No. Well, yes and no. If I don't have a boat to pull me, I can't water ski. Now, a plane could pull me, but it would pull me up into the air. And so, in essence, I wouldn't be skiing. To water ski, you need a boat to pull you. Water skiing. If you never water skied, it's a lot of fun. But it's not viable in Spain because you don't have any lakes. You have a few reservoirs, but they don't. I don't think they allow motorboats on the reservoirs. So you don't see people water skiing in the south of the province of Madrid. There's a water skiing place, but it's un poco cutre. It's a little bit small for water ski. It's very artificial for water skiing. I water skied a lot when I was a teenager because my girlfriend, Patty Palumbo, had a boat, an outboard motorboat. Her father bought it. Her father never used it. So the only people who used the boat was Patty Palumbo and myself. We had a lot of fun going on. We must have gone to the Lake Fort Gibson, El Lago Fuerte Gibson, Lake Fort Gibson. And we went there maybe in the summertime, maybe twice a month. And I learned how to ski. And I learned how to ski quite well with only one ski, not with two. It was a lot of fun, but I've never snow skied because I've never lived near the mountains. Now, yes, living in Spain, yes, but when I was growing up, I lived very far from mountains. In Houston, Texas, my God, the nearest mountain is 3 days by car just to get to the nearest mountain where you can ski. And from Tulsa, Oklahoma, it's 2 days by car. So I always lived at least 2 days away from ski areas, from ski resorts. Hey, Richard, have you ever hurt yourself lifting weights in the gym? No, I haven't. And I've lifted weights all my life. I started lifting weights when I was 17, when I was running, and when I was playing American football. You know, I think it affected my golf swing. So if you're a golfer, you need to be careful lifting weights. There was one golfer, Johnny Miller. If you look back in the 1970s, in 1974 and 75, I think Johnny Miller, he was the best golfer in the world for 1 or 2 years. Johnny Miller, he won 2 majors. He was born in 1947, so he's 73 now. And he won the Masters he won the U.S. Open in 1973, and he won the British Open in 1976. In 1974, he was the Player of the Year. He won 25 tournaments. And between 1976 and 1977, in the winter, he spent a lot of time working on a ranch carrying wood. And he never was able to recover his natural swing because he developed muscle groups that he had not developed before. The swing in golf and in baseball is something that's very sensitive. To be able to hit the ball the right way, you develop a swing. He was very, very good. But because not lifting weights, but lifting wood and a lot of tree branches and things, well, he lost the natural flow of his swing. Hey, Richard, so have you ever hurt yourself lifting weights? No, I haven't. I've never hurt myself lifting weights. I'm pretty careful when I lift weights. And I'm kind of an expert because I've been doing it since I was 17. Richard, does your car have GPS? Yes, it does, but I don't use it. I use the GPS on my cell phone. I don't use the GPS that my car offers. I've used it once only when my cell phone lost its battery. And so I was somewhere between Benalmádena and Málaga Capital. I was in the mountains and I got lost. And so I had to resort to the GPS to find my way. Richard, yeah. Would Hollywood eventually go bankrupt if it stopped making good films? Ah, yes. If Hollywood stopped making good films, it would eventually go bankrupt. Yeah. Yeah, a la larga. Entraría en quiebra toda la industria de Hollywood. Yeah, Hollywood would eventually, a la larga, would eventually go bankrupt if it stopped making good films. I'll be right back.
Más información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833 y te ayudaremos con lo que necesites. 91-133-5833.
Remember to follow us on social media to get all the latest information on all our offers and special deals.
¿Tienes niños? Pues, ¿qué mejor forma que aprendan inglés que haciendo lo que más les gusta? En nuestros campamentos de verano en inglés se divertirán participando en un sinfín de variadísimas actividades en un entorno seguro y 100% angloparlante, acompañados en todo momento de monitores Vaughan. Campamentos de verano para niños. No abandones tu inglés.
Las plazas vuelan, así que llama ya al 91-133-5832. 91-133-5832. Sí, dígame.
Ahora tu profesor Vaughan, desde tu casa, la oficina. Tu profesor Vaughan en clases telefónicas. Ahora más fácil y cómodo. Consigue uno de los tres planes de formación en grupovaughan.com/clases telefónicas.
Contact us now for a free level test and get started on your trimestrales right away. Your English adventure awaits. Trimestrales de Vaughan.
Nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia es la opción perfecta para perfeccionar tu inglés en poco tiempo y sin perder tiempo en incómodos desplazamientos. 100% online, por videoconferencia, desde cualquier lugar. Grupos de 6 personas como máximo. Horario de mañana o tarde. Prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿Qué más quieres? Nosotros no podemos darte más facilidades. Ahora te toca a ti. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate sobre nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia.
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio. Haz una pausa y disfruta mejorando, aprendiendo con tu curso trimestral por videoconferencia. Con todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Por fin llega tu mejor momento del día. Cursos trimestrales por videoconferencia. Haz tu reserva en el 91-133-5833. 91-133-5833. Lo que más miedo da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso Vaughan ha desarrollado las clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%. Contrata las clases telefónicas de inglés de Vaughan para tu empresa. Llama al 91-133-5831 o entra en grupovaughan.com.
If you haven't made any decision yet about your children or young adolescents concerning summer camps, July and August and early September, we offer summer camps in different places around Spain. We also offer camps in Canada and other parts of the world. And so look into it now, because the sooner you sign up, the better. The sooner you sign up, because a time always comes in the early spring or the mid-spring in which we're full. Sometimes we're booked up, and some parents get upset, and it's usually because they didn't call in time. They waited too late. They waited too long. So for the summer camps for children or for young adolescents, think about it. Try to make your decision now and to act on it, or at least to call us in Baugan for information about this. Thank you.
Más información en el 911-133-5832 o en grupobaugan.com.
Si tienes alguna duda o necesitas información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833. Repito, 91-133-5833.
La Hora Extra con Richard Baugan.
Hello and welcome back to our last half hour of today's Monday edition, Monday evening, 10:30 at night. Pretty late, eh? It's pretty late. So, do you know how to sew a button? Yes, I can sew on a button. To sew. Sew is coser. A sewing machine is máquina de coser, sewing machine. To sew on a button means ponerlo, poner un botón. Cosiendo. To sew on a button. Yes, I know how to do it. Not very well. That's the only thing I know how to sew. My mother never taught me how to sew. Strange spelling. S-E-W. Sew. F-E-W is few. N-E-W is new or new. All right. E-W normally is ooh. Crew. The past tense of blow. Blue. Screw. But so, English spelling and English pronunciation, my God. We spend years in primary school learning how to spell. So, yes, I know how to sew on a button. Do you know how to sew on a button? Was Rembrandt a famous Italian filmmaker in the early 20th century? No. You're asking some silly questions now. No, Rembrandt wasn't a famous Italian filmmaker in the early 20th century. Well, who was the most famous filmmaker in the early 20th century? Well, G.D. Griffith, but that was very early. Charlie Chaplin. But there were a lot of very good filmmakers in the early 20th century. But I'm not an expert on that. I'm not an expert on filmmakers. Filmmakers son are productores cinematográficos, people who make movies. A filmmaker. Who's the most famous Italian filmmaker? Oh, that's a good one. Well, there are a lot. Luchino Visconti, Bernardo Bertolucci, Michelangelo. I can't remember their names. The one who... Oh, I can't remember their names. Antonioni, Michelangelo Antonioni. And there are more before that. Italian filmmakers are very, very good. They are quite artistic, quite well. Federico Fellini, and many, many more. I think Visconti perhaps is considered one of the best. Bertolucci, Antonioni. I'm forgetting the one who was the husband of the Swedish actress. There was one Italian filmmaker who was the husband of the Swedish actress who was with Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, and whose name I never remember. Yes, let's see. Okay, Casablanca film, and we'll find out. Her name is Casablanca. Come on. All right, Ingrid Bergman. Now, she married an Italian film director.
Let's see, her husbands were Roberto Rossellini. There's another one. You know, if you look, if you make a list of great Italian filmmakers, there are a lot of names. Federico Fellini, Pier Paolo Pasolini, Michelangelo Antonioni, Bernardo Bertolucci, Vittorio De Sica, I forgot him, Luchino Visconti, Roberto Rossellini, let's see, Francesco Rossi, and a few others. Sergio Leone, of course. Martin Scorsese, but he's American. Franco Zeffirelli, yes. Pretty good ones, eh? Some really good ones here. And it's interesting that Italy, Vittorio Gassman, but he was an actor as much as a director. Vittorio Gassman, Roberto Benigni, and many more. It's interesting that this country has produced so many, probably more than France. I mean, if you look at Europe as a factory of cinema, I would say Italy is number one. More than the United Kingdom. France, the UK, Germany, Sweden, Spain, Italy. I would say Italy's number one. Although the Italian films are special, they have a certain artistic slant that you don't find in others. I like French movies a lot. And also the Italian comedies are pretty funny and things. But the 15 greatest Italian directors of all time. Okay, fíjate, of all time. De todos los tiempos, we say de todo el tiempo. De todo tiempo, we say. The 15 greatest. Number 15, according to... Who is this? I don't know. Number 15 is Elio Petri. I'm not familiar with him. Paolo Sorrentino. I'm not familiar with him either. Pietro Germi. I'm not familiar with him either. Giuseppe Tornatore. Yes, a little bit. It rings a bell. Mario Bava. Bernardo Bertolucci. Mario Monticelli. And then it continues. I have the first five, but I can't find the rest. So it takes me too long when I'm looking through. But Italy has produced a lot of very good cinema in the 20th century and the 21st century. Richard, don't you think this list of questions is remarkable? Remarkable means extraordinary. Don't you think this list of questions is remarkable? Extraordinary? No, I don't. I think it's a list of questions simply to provoke conversation, to practice English. That's all. It's not a remarkable, well, 1,800 sentences is not bad, eh? That's remarkable, the sheer number of sentences, but the quality of the sentences, no. By the way, Richard, was Sleeping Beauty the one who got involved with the Seven Dwarfs? No. Excuse me, Sleeping Beauty. What are you asking me? I'm asking you. Una máscara. Masking? Masking tape? No. I am asking you. Ah. I'm intending máscara. No. I said, I'm asking you. Eso, masking. No, it's I'm asking. And I link the two words. I'm asking you. That's how native people say it. I'm asking you. If Sleeping Beauty was the one who got involved with the Seven Dwarfs. No, she wasn't. Sleeping Beauty didn't get involved with the Seven Dwarfs. Well, who was it? ¿Quién era? Fíjate, digo it. ¿Quién era la que salió con los siete enanitos? Who was it that got involved. Bueno, to get involved no es liarse sexually, no. To get involved means involucrarse. Who was it? El it. Pogasta, until you establish the identity of the person, you don't say he or she. Who was it that got involved? If it was, if it, fijaos como uso it. Si no era la bella durmiente, entonces quién era? La que estuvo con los siete dwarfs, los siete enanitos. If it wasn't Sleeping Beauty, then who was it? If it wasn't Sleeping Beauty, then who was it? It was Snow White. Oh, that's right, Snow White. Yes, Snow White. She's the one who looked in the mirror. No, that wasn't Snow White. Well, who was it? Who was the one that looked in the mirror? That was Snow White's stepmother. And why did she look in the mirror? Oh, because it was a magic mirror. And there was a voice and a person behind the mirror. And she asked, every day she asked, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest one of all? Fair means beautiful. And the mirror always said, you are my queen. Hey, you're a real hot tamale. the mirror said. And so she was very happy until one day he decided, well, that's no longer the case. Your stepdaughter has now reached maturity, and she's a hot tamale even more than you. And so a tamale is a Mexican tamale. Tamales, los tamales. It's a Mexican dish. In the United States, we can say a hot tamale. He said, she's really good looking. And so the queen, of course, decided to kill her, to kill her stepdaughter. And so she tried in one way and failed. And then so she decided, you know, I can't delegate tasks. Nobody does things right. She decided to delegate the task to one of the members of the court, and he didn't do it. And so she said, well, if you want something to be done right, do it yourself. Correct? And so she took on the responsibility personally of killing her stepdaughter. She transformed herself into a wicked witch. Bruja malvada. A wicked witch. And she prepared a poison apple. And she went out to find Snow White. And Snow White took a bite of the apple and fell into a deep sleep that would last forever unless she were kissed by a man who truly fell in love with her. And it just happened that there was a prince in the neighborhood passing by, and he noticed this beautiful young lady sleeping and these seven little strange creatures, the dwarfs, around her. He said, hey, what's going on here? And they said, well, she's under a spell. She's under a spell. What kind of spell? Well, she said, no, a witch cast a spell on her. A witch cast a spell. Un hechizo. And we say to cast a spell means to manda un hechizo, hacer un hechizo. And she's sleeping. And the prince approached and, hey, wow, she's a hot tamale. She's really not good looking. Yeah. Hey, and if I push her, or will she wake up? She won't wake up unless she is kissed by a man who truly loves her. And he looked at her and said, wow, you know, she is just the girl for me. She's my girl, my girl, my girl. Talk about my girl. Yes. And so he leaned down, se inclino. He leaned down and gave her a kiss. And she woke up, jumped on the back of his horse, and off they went to eat partridge, right? Comer perdices. And to be happy, of course. I wonder if, I doubt they got a divorce. Divorce didn't exist at that time. So I imagine they stayed together. But Sleeping Beauty wasn't the one who got involved with the seven dwarfs. It was Snow White. All right. Richard, have you ever made 10 free throws in a row? Yes, I have, yeah. Many times. Well, usually I don't count the free throws, but yes, it's not too difficult. Well, it's not easy. But if you throw free throws every day, you will have a run of 10 in a row. Yes, I have made 10 free throws in a row. Excuse me, Richard, I don't understand what you're saying. I've made 10 free throws in a row. Yeah, in basketball, a free throw. Ah, tiro libre. Yeah, in basketball. Now, to make a free throw means encestas bien, el tiro libre. You make a free throw. And in practice, I have made 10 free throws in a row, consecutive, without missing. I remember because we used to play that game. 1, 2, 3, and I made 10 in a row. It's not so difficult once you get... The question of a free throw is if you shoot it once and you miss, the second time you're close, so you get the measurements, you get the distance, you gauge the distance, and by the fourth free throw, boom, boom, boom. I remember one game I was playing, it was very, very close. It was very, very close. Close, cercano, no close, but significa muy reñida. Muy reñido el partido. 46 to 45. And I had 2 free throws. And to tell you the truth, I'm not the best free throw shooter in the world. My average was probably 60%. 55 or 60%, so I'm not the best free throw shooter. But I remember that moment. And there was only about 1 minute left in the game, or 30. It was at the end of the game. And we were ahead. I think we were ahead by 1 point. And if I made those 2 free throws, we would be ahead by 3 points. And at that time, the 3-point shot didn't exist yet. I don't remember when the 3-point shot started. Yeah, when did the 3-point line start? I think it was in 1970 something. 1979. The NBA didn't adopt the 3-point shot until 1979. The rookie season from Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. All right. But I'm talking about 1970. 1969 or 1970. The winter, 69-70. And I was standing at the free throw line, and I needed to make it. Como fuera. I just had to make that shot. And I shot it, and it was too long. I saw, oh my God, it's too far. But it hit the backboard and bounced in, so I banked it in. We say to bank. To bank in basketball. I said, to bank in basketball is a special shot. And it hits the backboard and goes into the net, goes into the basket. And I banked it in. I was so lucky. But the second shot was perfect. I made it because it gave me the confidence. Oh, God is on my side. El Dios está de mi parte. God is on my side because that free throw hit the backboard and went into the... So I was lucky. And I remember one player for the other team, Lynn Phillips. He said, "Gah, what God, what luck." He was so upset that I was so lucky. And he was right. I was lucky. I overshot the free throw too hard. It was going too far. But it hit the backboard and went in. And Lynn Phillips, on the opposing team, said, "God, what luck." And he was right. I was lucky. But I've made 10 free throws in a row, eh? But probably once in my life, eh? Or twice in my life. But, hey, Richard, does a dirt road get muddy after several days of rain? Not only several days, a dirt road gets muddy after 1 day of rain. Muddy. A dirt road es un camino de tierra. Now, if it rains, the dirt turns into mud. Mud is barro, lodo, fango. That's mud. M-U-D. Mud. And it... And dirt. Dirt is el bar tierra. Dirt is tierra. Dirt. También hablaba dirty. O sea, dirty significa que tienes tierra en las manos o suciedad. But dirt, dirt means tierra. Tierra de polvo. No, la tierra. That's the earth, of course. And tierra is also land. I mean, you have the word tierra. You have at least three different meanings for tierra in English. Excuse me, in Spanish. La tierra is the earth. Es una tierra. Hay tierra. Está hecho de tierra es land. La tierra en Castilla y León es seca. O de secano. The land in... O sea, suelo agrícola. La tierra en Castilla-La Mancha es tierra de secano. All right. That means the land in Castilla-La Mancha is for dry land farming. Dry land farming. So that's in case tierra is land. But then tierra is dirt. Tengo tierra en las manos de haber cavado un agujero, un hoyo. So I have dirt on my hands, dirt. So a dirt road... is a un camino a tierra. Now, if it rains for several hours, well, the dirt turns into mud. And so you can't travel easily. That happened to the German army in Russia. The Germans, the Wehrmacht, invaded the Soviet Union in July. Yeah. Operation Barbarossa. Operation Barbarossa it started on June 22nd, 1941. Yes, Operation Barbarroja in Spanish. We usually call it Barbarossa. In English we say Barbarossa, the Italian word, Barbarossa. You say Barbarroja. And the German... the Nazi Wehrmacht passed into the Soviet Union, advanced very quickly. But they ran in, not too far from Moscow, they encountered the Russian fall, the Russian autumn. It started raining in October, late September, and it didn't stop raining. And the dirt roads that the German tanks and jeeps and other vehicles were using turned into mud, deep mud, and they just couldn't advance. They advanced, 6 kilometers a day instead of 60 kilometers a day. And so they were bogged down by the mud. Muddy road. Detour. There's a muddy road ahead. Detour. So, does a dirt road get muddy after several days of rain? Yes. In fact, a dirt road gets muddy after one day of rain, in my opinion. Well, it depends on how much it rains. Question, is the U.S. dollar the most important currency in the world today? Yes, by far. That's one of the main reasons for the power and influence of the United States. International trade is based on the dollar. If Spain wants to buy copper from Chile, cobre, well, it pays for it in the quotes that are made in dollars. If Spain buys oil from Kuwait, well, it's quoted. The prices are quoted in dollars. And so Spain needs to acquire dollars to pay Kuwait or to pay Chile or to pay the United States. Between France and Spain, well, they use the euro, of course, within the European Union, the euro. This is something that has always been a big complaint by many countries, especially now China. China wants to establish the yuan, as a valid currency for foreign trade, para el comercio exterior. But it's very, very difficult to do that because most suppliers, proveedores, will not accept yuans. They will only accept dollars. And so China has to pasar por lado just to buy all of the goods that they import. And of course, China imports enormous amounts of goods and services, usually paying in dollars. And that's very frustrating for a country like China. It's very frustrating for a country like Germany or France, Great Britain, Spain, Brazil. But the dollar is king still. Oh, todavía, sigue siendo. The dollar is king. And so, yes, the U.S. dollar is the most important currency in the world today. Currency significa moneda o divisa. La moneda más importante, la divisa. Maybe bitcoins, maybe cryptocurrencies will take over, but I have my doubts. But I'm not very expert on those things. And besides, I'm running out of time. So, have a great evening, and I'll see you tomorrow morning. Take care. Bye-bye.
Alguna duda o necesitas información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833. Repito, 91-133-5833.
Okay, now, tell me you want to do 10 more push-ups.
I want to do 10 more push-ups.
Very good. Ask me if I'll tell you to do 10 more.
Will you tell me to do 10 more?
No, I'm going to tell you to do 20 more.